Markets and Cointext. He's back to take us through a new project, Signal Watch and Pay Protocol Swap, and it's really exciting. It's rather involved. It's both simple and complex and profound, and basically it's Vin Armani in digital form. So we get a chance to talk to him a little bit about it and what it means for Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoiners more broadly. But before we jump into all that, Vin, thanks so much, man, for coming on again.
Thank you for having me, Edward. It's always a pleasure. And, you know, on this particular occasion, I you know, it was me reaching out to you saying, I want to try to explain what I feel is the importance of this protocol that I've released. And I could not think of anyone who gets it. And when I say it, I mean just sort of this whole Bitcoin thing from a like big picture style, who's having conversations with people about these things. So I want to say thanks for having me on, but more importantly, like, thanks for continuing to do what you do, because it's important, especially the most recent conversations that you've had. I think they've been eye-opening for a lot of people.
Well, that's high praise, and I do appreciate it. But yeah, so it is, I guess, auspicious for us to be talking. This full disclosure here, I was going to have Vin on yesterday, but I forgot it was Mother's Day. And I was reminded in no uncertain terms. So I was like, uh-oh. And so I pushed Vin off a day, and he graciously allowed us to record. But then I forgot, of course, it's the BTC third halving. And that is apropos, I believe, for the conversation today. In that there's, well, I guess I'll prompt you a little bit later as to why I think it might be a good time to talk about Swap and on this day in particular. But you've had some changes in your personal life that I don't think I'm exposing too early here. I guess some of the Bitcoin Cash people might not know. You've made a geographical move of some proportion. Can you kind of go into that a little bit and maybe why you're doing that? And I mean, obviously that's not the focus of the podcast, but it is interesting.
Yeah, I'm currently living with my family in Saipan, which is, people are like, where? Japan? No, Saipan, which is Saipan, which is an island in the Marianas Island chain, and it is part of the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands, which is a territory of the United States. It's in the middle of the Pacific, in Micronesia, and yeah, we made the move here at the beginning of April, just sort of as the weirdness was hitting full steam. I had been living in California, which is where I was raised, after coming back there from New Hampshire after the birth of my second child. And we were in Southern California, and it was quite weird, and I think the weirdness hasn't even fully hit. I mean, we could see Southern California right now is weird. And, you know, I think with my political views, with the way that Bitcoin is, with the work that I was seeing myself do over the next, you know, year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe longer, that I needed to be able to have the space to do that. And we had been thinking, my wife and I had been thinking about making a move here. There's a group that's doing a kind of a, what would you say, a crypto-centric community here they're trying to start. that I had thought was really interesting. CNMI, the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands, has some interesting aspects to it. It is, although it is part of the United States, they have both a separate tax and customs regime. This was one of the first places in the world to have, and certainly in the English-speaking world, to have legalized marijuana. They also have legalized production of the local alcohol here, which is called tuba. It's a form of palm wine. It's legal for anybody to just produce that on their coconut palm trees, which are everywhere here. Gambling is legal. And if you live here, you're not subject to IRS. And you're not subject to U.S. customs. The customs is different. It's quite small, but it's also incredibly laid back. And while they've participated in some of the madness around this whole COVID thing, and while people are walking around wearing masks and some stores won't let you in without it and some businesses are closed, just as a microcosm, out on the beach are people commingling. There have not really been many cases here. I think there's been under 20 total. They just recently found 4 young guys under the age of 25. They're currently the only confirmed positive cases in the entire Commonwealth, all of them asymptomatic. And yeah, it's been relatively calm here. It's been a good change of pace, but I think that it's the type of place that, and the type of sort of project with this intentional community that is, you know, just sort of hits right at the perfect spot. And, you know, my family is very, very happy to be able to get out and get on the beach and be in basically a tropical paradise. So yeah, I think it's been a good move. And I think it was the right time to do it. I know if I was in Southern California still right now, just knowing myself, I'd be just a mess looking around and seeing what's going on. But here I feel relatively calm, and it's been very helpful for me to be able to knuckle down and get to work.
Well, that's good to hear. I think people discount too much the mental health aspects of a clean break, getting to somewhere where you can be left alone, you know, relatively speaking. Yeah, Southern California is where I am based, so I feel you in so many ways there. Well, very good. So that gets us to really a lot of the work that you've been doing for the past few months, as far as I can tell, probably longer, where you've been kind of slowly and in dribs and drabs, I don't know if slowly is the right word, but you've been breaking bits and pieces off as to kind of rolling out your vision of Bitcoin Cash and why it's special and different. And right off the top, I remember the postage protocol that we talked about late last year. Where are you on that? Does this have anything to do with Swap necessarily, or am I reaching a bit?
No, it does, as a matter of fact. These are all related to this concept of collaborative transactions. So the postage protocol is, I've been working on what is turned into Swap. I've been working on solving this problem. Gosh, I mean, it's over a year at this point. So it's probably in the range of almost a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Where I've basically been trying to solve the problem of how do you create a system where we can take advantage of Bitcoin's unique transaction property, that it can have multiple inputs and multiple outputs in a single transaction, and that those inputs and outputs don't have to be a single party. So basically where Bitcoin is different, and this is something that I've been actually writing about and talking about for a long time, and it's sort of hard for people to wrap their heads around why this is important until there is something like Postage Protocol or Swap where they can actually see it taking place. But if you think about your bank statement that you would get, and you look at the ledger that's your bank statement of your transactions, on every line you have either a credit or a debit, a payment coming in or out. And while those may go to different parties on each line, what you do have is you have a recipient and a sender on each line. And You don't, so you can't write a check to two different people, basically. When it says pay to the order of, you can't just put 20 people on there. Mm-hmm. And also, you can't have a check that is paid from out of multiple accounts. So, like, you can't take your paycheck, but it comes from five different accounts. I would need to send you five different checks from mm-hmm. those accounts. Bitcoin is totally different in that you actually can do that in a transaction. And so, as I really sat down and started meditating on this difference, and perhaps why would Satoshi put something in there like that? Like, what is it? Why is this there, and how can we leverage it to make Bitcoin better? Something that Vitalik didn't do, for instance, with Ethereum. Ethereum uses a balance-based transaction scheme. So it is exactly one, it's a sender and a recipient, and it's not multiple. Now, you can fan it out and send it to multiple people using a smart contract, but you still have to send to the smart contract address, and then the smart contract address will send five different, let's say, transactions that were outbound. So you have to collect it in a single address and then send it out, which is still something that you can do with Bitcoin. But no one had really taken advantage of this unique property. We use it in almost every transaction, especially a transaction where you send change out of your wallet and you send it back because you're sending it to a new address, like in a standard HD wallet. You'll have at least two outputs if you don't spend all the money in your balance. And usually... Or often, if you've received multiple payments and then you want to pay out, you'll have multiple inputs. But it's always been like one party on either side for the most part, and especially on the input side. And so I started to think, well, what does this mean? Like, what could we potentially do? And why would I want a transaction where Kelso and I were both going in on this transaction? Like, what would be the use for that? And so there's I think the canonical use for it really came up when the SLP token was invented. And what I did with Swap Protocol is basically it's an exchange. It's a collaborative transaction where I put in the SLP, post office puts in the BCH, the post office receives SLP, and basically it goes through. But it could be that I receive BCH. This type of exchange is being done on memo.cash. Mm-hmm. There's a protocol that's a memo swap protocol. It's quite different from the one that I put up. And I actually wasn't even aware that that's what they were doing until after I had started writing the swap protocol. And then I went and somewhere had said, oh, isn't this what memo.cash does? And I was like, oh, do they? And I went and looked, and it's actually a very interesting way that and kind of slick way that he's found to do the swap. So this was the canonical way. And then I started thinking about, well, what are some more things that you could do? And the things that came up was you could do escrow funding. And I've been working on some sports betting stuff, as people know, like with Jeton Lib, which I put out. In the background of that, I was working on a protocol that used BIP70 servers and these sort of intermediaries of how do we get these two escrow people to talk to each other. And then crowdfunding, which is something that people in the community have been doing. And so they're using these sort of collaborative transactions. And so what was missing out of all of that, and what the problem that had been the hardest to solve was, how do we make that negotiation and communication? How do we take the third party out of that? Because if there's a third party in there, that can be censored. And then that's not really Bitcoin. It becomes like an exchange. Now, obviously, it's a trusted third party is a great place to make money. That's where everybody in Bitcoin currently and in cryptocurrency currently is making money. The exchanges, basically, as acting as trusted third parties. But does that fulfill really the vision of Satoshi? Does that fulfill the purpose of Bitcoin, which is, as it says in the white paper, to allow any two willing parties to transact directly without going through a third party?
And the exchange just on that one idea, obviously, you know, I'm sure Satoshi at some point, the person of the group or, you know, however we want to pronoun it, probably thought there would be some kind of exchange. I doubt they saw or he saw you know, what we have now, which are these colossal, very powerful, trusted parties. And so I immediately thought when I was reading through the exchange portion, well, and you kind of already answered this, but I'm asking anyway. Isn't this just sort of an Ethereum decentralized exchange idea?
No, it's very different than Ethereum and the idea of a decentralized exchange that's based on smart contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Because here with Ethereum, there's code and logic, and if we would say routing, that's being done by a smart contract on the chain. And so he who is in control of the smart contract,
right,
worse, is in control of the funds. And we've seen what that means. So that means everything from inside jobs of bugs being placed in on purpose and people mm-hmm. stealing, to things like the parity hack, which whether that was on purpose or not, people lost millions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's like we keep on these DeFi things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Seeing whether it's always called a hack, but it's like, you know, what we see is that there is code that is being run that is not necessarily being audited, that people are being relied upon, or people are relying upon it. And the fact of the matter is that it's like, just because it's running on Ethereum doesn't change the nature of what it is. It's not running on the peer, the individual machines of the individual peers. It's running on a third party machine. And this moves it to a point, to a place where there's no logic within the swap protocol that is not running between the two parties. All they're doing is they're using the Bitcoin blockchain as exactly what it is, which is a universal immutable ledger. And so basically I'm saying, hey, I've got something to sell. I'm making an advertisement. There's nothing, I could hand you a bill, like a flyer for that too, right? I could send you an email. I could do all of these things with the same way that I could with the swap protocol if I knew who you were. And then we could negotiate using the same protocol and we could move through it. But in this case, it enables me to basically advertise to the world. And then anyone who has access to the blockchain can effectuate a transaction with me. And it can be done in a trustless manner, which is the most powerful thing about these collaborative transactions, that we can both see. I can basically say, this is the only transaction that I am signing. And you can look at it and say, that is a valid transaction. I will sign the second part of this. And then we broadcast it up. And if it's valid, instantly the exchange is made. Completely trustless. And if either party double spends it somehow, no harm, no foul. The other party, it's as if it didn't even exist. You didn't lose any funds or anything. So it's like there's no way for there to be something like the parity hack or one of these other hacks that happens in DeFi all the time. It's literally impossible for it to happen.
Yeah, I really wanted to like DeFi, and I'm not totally soured on it, but I'm pretty close to being there. I really wanted to like it. It speaks to the whole complexity and buzzword stuff, and it's easy to write about. I don't have to explain anything. I just throw it off on Vitalik or whoever the latest genius is, and I can just publish stories ad infinitum. But I was asked one time to explain, I'm trying to think of, like you say, there's just so many hacks now, I can't keep track of it. But I remember someone asking me and using the word hack in relation to the latest with DeFi, a problem, issue, hey, where did my money go scenario. And I was like, honestly, I think using the word hack is maybe provocative. Like, I think these dudes are just smarter than the people who set up, you know, the interaction, and they're just right. taking advantage of the steps. I don't even know if it's fraudulent. They're just kind of using what's, you know, I mean, if you're gonna leave your door open, leave all the gold there, and there's a right. you know, sign that's pointing at the gold, and I can't, anyway, but I don't want to get too lost on that. But my point was to immediately contrast it with Ethereum, in the sense that what's really wonderful about Ethereum is that it is complex, and it is this world computer and all these cool and neato things. And developers and nerd conventions and all this wonderful stuff. But I like it that you and this remnant, a few guys that I can count, basically a handful that are kind of redirecting us back. Spoke with Shama recently, kind of the same vibe, redirecting us back to on the, and I wanted to ask you this in particular. On the one hand, the Bitcoin Cash community is, at least was, considered too dogmatic with regard to the white paper. And I've always found that interesting just because, well, we simply point out the title and we reference it. But I think the charge sort of stuck for a while, in the sense that we had some people in there who were rather dogmatic about the white paper and Satoshi and so on. But I noticed, like, you and some others, Amari and some others, have just like, well, you know, like, it's wonderful. There's some great aspects to it, but we do need to raise the block size. And, you know, some of the opcodes do need to be, you know, returned and expanded and so on. You even in this swap paper that you put out on Medium, which we'll link to in the show notes, even you say it's sort of time to kind of challenge it and take it one step further, the Bitcoin idea. So how crucial is it to make these ideas less DeFi-like? So where Ethereum could be sort of obscurantist, is sort of the Bitcoin Cash value proposition the continual pointing back to trustless on-chain?
I think that's this is something that, after I put this protocol out, I think maybe clearing it off my plate gave me a chance to think about, like, think about these questions. And it's something that I've been exploring, like, on Twitter recently as well. And some of it is because, you know, well, I'll just say this. I noticed something very interesting about, you know, when we talk about the community and where we're at. And I think you had a conversation with Amari, and you guys spent some time talking about stated values and embodied values. And, you know, he has this idea that the stated values of this community, of Bitcoin Cash community, are not in line with the embodied values. And I take him to task for that a little bit, because I don't really hear any values being stated. That's the first thing. And then in terms of embodied values, I think there's something very interesting. And I think that this will probably be the case whenever people listen to this. You know, if they go to RBTC on Reddit, which seems to be, when people talk about the BCH community, they seem to be talking about the discussions that occur on RBTC. And there's some really good historical reasons why that's the case. I think it's also probably notable that the BCH community is based in a subreddit that is called BTC. So then there's some good historical reasons for that as well. I understand.
Yeah.
But I think that it's probably notable when we talk about what our stated values are, that it starts in a place that's not even named BCH. Kind of notable. Or Bitcoin Cash.
Sure.
But I think one of the interesting things is, you know, I went through the other day as I was thinking about this. I don't have a Reddit account. I really do not like the crypto conversations on Reddit. I think they're really unproductive. But I do look from time to time because I want to know what's going on. And I went 5 pages in on that subreddit, and I had still not found a post that in any way referenced the global economic crisis and the printing of money that is going on globally, and the shutting down of economies, the censoring of financial transactions, which is what you're doing when you are preventing willing buyers and sellers from being able to transact with each other. And this was taking place in a Bitcoin community. And while Satoshi didn't get everything right in the white paper, and there are things that we use in Bitcoin that have worked, are as a as a matter of fact, different from the things that were proposed in the white paper. I do think that the purpose still stands. And I mean, you read the first page of the white paper and it's pretty clear what Satoshi thought he was making. He was making a tool to allow any two willing parties to transact directly without the need for a third party. And it's a simple statement, but it has massive implications when you're in an environment, a global environment, where the power, the vast power of the state is melded with financial third parties, the banking system, and where the well-being of individuals is based upon the behavior of those exact institutions. And he created a system to allow people to take power back from those institutions. And for a community that is seemingly so passionate about what Bitcoin should and should not be, and what should and should not be done for the future of Bitcoin, to be in the middle of a global economic crisis in which the banks are playing a major part, and these trusted third parties that Satoshi was clearly trying to disintermediate are playing a massive role, and for them to be talking about many things quite passionately, except for that, seems to me, I don't know what to think of it yet, but it's something that I definitely noticed, and it's been heavy, heavy on my mind as of late.
Yeah, it is an interesting sort of bruise, something that's out there that's, you know, it's so obvious it almost is impossible to notice. We're just kind of skipping over. Really, I guess what is the dominant motivator for the entire project. So with Swap, and I'll go back to speaking on the occasion of the halving for BTC. It's interesting because whoever mined the that crucial block today referenced exactly what you just said, which is the $1 trillion infusion into the U.S. economy, and therefore the world, and that is super interesting. That it is still something that at least popularly animates part of the BTC crowd, and yet Bitcoin Cash is supposedly the, you know, the ones that are working towards actually thwarting it. And yet we're almost ignoring it. So that's an interesting contrast that I really hadn't thought about. So looking, I guess, back at Swap here, the exchange idea basically comes down to it being trustless and completely on-chain. But I noticed throughout the sort of the three main parts of Swap, the escrow with an oracle and crowdfunding, that you're linking it to a compatible wallet. Is it too early to talk about that? Should we continue on here, or can you weave in right away why a compatible wallet is not a technical wrinkle in the trustless idea?
Well, I mean, in order to participate in a Bitcoin transaction, you have to have a compatible wallet.
Right.
In order to participate in an SLP, to have SLP tokens, you have to have an SLP compatible wallet. I mean, you have to have a wallet that actually has the protocol built into it. So that's literally all that it means, is that, like, well, you can't just do this in a wallet that hasn't been programmed to read these messages. And to participate in collaborative transactions. So I think I probably could have left out a compatible wallet. It is interesting that people have brought that up as some sort of a criticism, where it's like, well, yeah, in order to do a Visa transaction, you're going to need to have a compatible card and a compatible point of sale system. Like, it's sort of self-evident, right? That it's like, in order to make a phone call, Bluetooth headphones, you're going to need to have some Bluetooth headphones, right? That's basically what it's saying, is that Bluetooth is a protocol, right? You're not going to be able to, my headphones that I've got plugged into this machine right now are not Bluetooth compatible headphones. And if you're going to use Bluetooth compatible headphones, you're going to need to use them with a Bluetooth compatible device. You know, the radio in a 1956 Chevy stock is not going to work with your Bluetooth phone. You're not going to do hands-free. That's basically all that's being said there, is that,
okay,
that both parties obviously have to be able to communicate with each other. And in order to do that, they both need to be using a wallet that is using the swap protocol. That's all it means.
Got it. And the exchange idea, you are linking to SLP tokens in particular, as being important. And is I think at one point you said you thought SLP is kind of the game changer within Bitcoin Cash to some degree, and I might be paraphrasing you wrong. Do you still kind of strongly believe in the SLP idea?
100%. Yeah, I think it's huge. And I think it's going to be even bigger. I saw that BCHD got a considerable amount of funding. I know that, as I've spoken with the gentleman over there, I know that extending their indexing to handle SLP tokens, which is something that Bitcoin Verde already does.
Yeah, you referenced both, yeah.
Yes, is massive. I just say BCHD because, like, I moved Cointext over to BCHD, and it is just a great node, man. Like, as a business node, it is just fantastic. And, you know, people are getting interested in developing on nodes, and I'm like, man, indexing on the nodes. People are not aware, who are not working with wallets that do SLP, who are not running explorers, who are not running exchanges. There's no way to overstate how needed solid indexing is for us to do some of this more advanced stuff. But SLP, you know, James Cramer, when he first wrote the simple ledger protocol stuff, he was really not necessarily going for like a token thing. It was, I think, his work collaboration with Donald Feuchtball, where they turned it into the token protocol.
Yes.
James, you know, and I use in the swap protocol, I basically use a modified version of another protocol that James wrote called Bitcoin Files, which was for putting files onto the blockchain, which is not something that I'm into, but because the messages here were a little bit bigger, they usually take, some of them will take like 2 or 3 transactions to chain through to get the message. It really was perfect. James is a really brilliant guy, and he doesn't get enough credit within this community for all the work that he's done and continues to do. There would be no SLP tokens, and the SLP infrastructure would not be out there without this guy. And, you know, there's a series of other people. JT comes to mind,
sure,
and some other people as well, right? And it's all about this indexing. And his vision, and honestly, a lot of this stuff is also, you know, credit out to Unwriter, who has now clearly left the BCH community and went, mm-hmm, to BSV. But a lot of that work, that those techniques that he developed, or she, we don't know, those are still in use as well. So, like, huge credit to these people for doing this unsung background work. Huge credit. But what it basically allows is, it allows the extension of Bitcoin's ledger property. For us to be able to use it as a pseudo database, a global pseudo database, we have to be really careful about what we do with that database. And so for me, like, when we talk about what's the value of the white paper, I think the value of the white paper is for us to have something to call back on of, like, what are we supposed to be using Bitcoin for? That's, I asked in a tweet, like, what do you think Bitcoin's telos is? It's telos.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, what do you think its purpose is? And I found it interesting that nobody who responded said to allow two parties to transact directly without the need to go through a financial institution. Well, that's the first sentence of the white paper. It's exactly what Satoshi says he built it for. But yet, you don't think that's its function? It's some other nebulous thing? It's like, well, why not just ask the guy who made it? What did you make this for? And so, like, with Swap, that's, like, when I looked around, I was like, are we able to transact directly? Here we have this SLP, these SLP tokens. People want to be able to trade those and certainly trade those for BCH. Can we move the entire order book? Can we, and then escrow is another issue. And I know that like the guys at AnyHedge, they've been working on something for a long time. They've been working on this project as long as I have. And in fact, it was in Australia at the Bitcoin Cash City conference that I actually spent time talking with these guys about like, have you been able to solve this problem? Like, how do we arrange the meeting of these two people who are going to fund this escrow? How do we do it in one trend? Like, how do we figure this out? We've been all working hard at this. And so moving it on chain really seemed to be what Satoshi was calling for, was to say like, no, this system, this is the system based on cryptographic proof and not trust. This will allow any two willing parties to transact directly without a third party. Like, do it here, put it here. And so then that's a Swap protocol. And I mean, I hope that Swap isn't the last protocol. I hope that people find the inefficiencies and the inconsistencies and they make a better one. But we've got to have a place to start, to at least start experimenting and working on it. And then, I mean, to the point of a wallet, that's what I'm working on in the next 60 days.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to certainly be probably my last question. So from the exchange into, as you were just discussing, the escrow with an oracle, that multi-party escrow, it seems to me you're really looking at sports betting. I think that's too specific. You're looking at prediction markets in yes. particular, right?
Yes. So sports betting is the easy way to start experimenting with prediction markets, or at least it used to be before they decided that sports don't exist anymore, right? but sports betting is the canonical prediction market. And it's something that everybody understands, and it's already a huge industry, and you don't have to say prediction market to get people excited about sports betting. Like, and you don't have to be very technically sophisticated. People love to bet on sports. But what they're doing when they bet on sports is they're interacting in a prediction market. That's a prediction market. And
it's kind of derivative of futures, or maybe I'm saying it the opposite way.
I mean, I think futures are a little bit different, but I mean, futures would also be prediction markets as well.
Okay.
I think the valuable part of, or it's not, I think, but what the valuable part of prediction markets are and what sports betting at a global scale is valuable for is expressed in odds. So when you're able to see, because the odds basically tell you how the bets are lining up. You know, the bookmakers will make their odds initially because they need to, but those odds will change over time as the bets change over time. And so odds are basically a signal of who people think will win. And so it's a way of crowdsourcing information about the future. And it becomes even more impressive when it's not just sports, but it's people who are participating in it. So like in sports betting in general, if you're a professional athlete, or associated with it, like Pete Rose style, you're not allowed to bet on the outcome.
Sure wasn't.
Right? So, and there's a reason for that, because you can alter the outcome. But if we have these sort of broad, so you would want something where you could be able to bet on just about anything, like real betting, and then you don't really have a need for like polls. It's people putting their money where their mouth is, and you start to, at least the idea with prediction markets is that in some ways, you don't even have to have the event, or you can plan. You can plan because you can know what most people think will happen, and it's kind of a tool away from a 1984 state and towards a closer truth. Like, what do people really think, as opposed to you being told by propaganda what people think? And we know that totalitarian states do this, right? If you go to North Korea and you watch TV, you would believe that everybody in the whole country, except for you, thinks that everything is fine, right? And that's the this is a 1984. This is one of the big themes of Orwell's notion there. So prediction markets, I think, is huge, but it's also a place where very early on we can start to onboard people to Bitcoin Cash. Like, it's a gigantic market, and it's people who don't care about the technology but would very much like to win some money betting on their favorite teams. I think it's an easy win and low-hanging fruit, and it's why for this particular application I always use sports betting as the canonical one.
So just to annoy you for the purposes of our conversation here, going back to Ethereum-based ideas, obviously I'm going to bring up Augur. Have you learned anything as you venture into your multi-party escrow with an Oracle version of prediction markets? Have you learned anything from the Augur experience? There's some. To be honest with you, I'm not prepared to have an in-depth discussion, so you could probably dismiss me in about two sentences here, because I just thought of this. But Augur seemed to be gamed in a couple of different areas. The language was imprecise and some other things. It's just, I personally love the concept, and I really do admire all that Augur has done. But is this, once again, kind of the, taking that obscurantism and let's go back to first principles. So anyway, there's a question in there somewhere, Vin. I'm going to leave it to you to fish it out. But did Augur inspire you at all in any way in this regard?
It inspired me that it's the wrong way to go. So I think that basically what we're dealing with in the crypto community is we're dealing with two ideas. And I fundamentally think that the idea behind Bitcoin is that, and this is why so many Austrian economics fans, I think, are attracted to it. And I think that it's also why you will find avid socialists, as a matter of fact, like real political socialists in Ethereum, and yes, that there is, and they have no problem with it. And I think that it's, Thomas Sowell actually brings this up as well. I think it's a dichotomy that exists all over. And it's basically that there's two sides. One says that the problem is that our institutions are a mess, and that if we could just find the perfect institution, if we could just make code into law, and if the code was flawless, then all of mankind's problems would be solved. And that's kind of the Ethereum, the underlying implicit idea behind the Ethereum ethos, is that the institutions are flawed, let's move all of the institutions onto this world computer, and then all that means is that we just have to get the code right.
You're right. Yep.
But what I think that Bitcoin really represents, and what Satoshi says at what he's kind of saying at the end of the white paper, specifically when he says that the system is robust in its unstructured simplicity. Mm. That the idea is, no, human beings are flawed, but, and this is kind of the Hayekian idea, but if enough of us are free to interact with one another, we will tend to get it right over time, and the best solution will emerge as though through evolution. And that this is the role of a market, and this is the value of a free market. And thus, if you have a system which would allow any two individuals to transact directly without the need for a third party, that would be the quickest way to get to the best solution. And so in terms of the approach with doing swap and doing an oracle, the idea here is that no one is prevented from being an oracle. You could even be your own oracle. Mm-hmm. But in a free market of oracles, oracles would compete on reliability. So in other words, if you have a free market of oracles, you only really get one shot to get it wrong. before nobody will ever use your Oracle again, they're going to use an Oracle that hasn't gotten it wrong yet. And so Oracles are competing for reliability, for uptime, for the user experience overall. And what ends up happening is that just the most reliable Oracle that finds a business model that allows it to be reliable all the time and to not cheat is the one that winds up being used by everyone. And that's fundamentally the exact same incentive structure that Satoshi is writing about in the incentive section of the white paper. And so it just flows in perfectly. It uses Bitcoin. It's basically built on the same principles that Bitcoin is built on. It's just that next sort of abstraction layer above the transaction itself. And I believe that there are other abstraction layers above it, and that this is sort of the path that I see of growing and evolving Bitcoin as Bitcoiners in this next generation.
And I'm just struck by, we continue to return to that simplicity in this mm-hmm. discussion, which is so interesting. Looking over the GitHub, you've got a spec, reference code, it's all there. And I instinctively look for contributors, and I see one, Vin Armani, party of one, white courtesy phone, Vin Armani. This is all you?
Well, no, it's so the reference code, I started out by forking James Cramer's Bitcoin files, which sure. by the way, there's one contributor there. So he had already done a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of, just getting working code that would look at the indexer and that would put transactions together. There's a lot of modifications that I've made from his code. But in terms of, he had put together a very, very, very solid base. And so again, like all credit to him. I know he hasn't, he sort of made that code and then put up a little website for it and just never touched it again. No fanfare, no nothing. I don't think he's worked on it for a year. And there were some small little bugs, you know, that I encountered as I was working on it and reached out to him. And he, you know, kind of chuckled about it and was like, yeah, well, you know, they're there. I was the only person to work on it. and that happens. But I think that it's important to, you know, I mean, that was what Satoshi did too. You know, you gotta just do it. If you've got the idea, just do it. And then if it's of use and of interest, then people will pick it up and use it. But you gotta just do it. And I mean, I'm thankful now. I think that this is sort of the fruition of a lot of things to now be able to go onto the client side. And I'm actually super excited because Bitcoin.com, they had a relatively large, let's see, what would we say? Downsizing of sure. personnel. Sure. And, some of the most talented people in the space, honestly. And along with that, they fundamentally downsized many of the projects, the open source projects that had been put together. And so there's all of this really just like gold laying on the ground. And one of those projects, for better or worse, is Badger Wallet. So right. Bitcoin.com is no longer going to be supporting Badger Wallet. They've basically left it to the community. And I had done, you know, with Postage Protocol, my prototype, the code was with Badger Wallet. I didn't release it publicly. And one of the reasons I didn't release it publicly is because I actually wanted to be able to be like the first person to take advantage of it. And I knew that I still had a lot more work to do on these other protocols. So that was a little selfish on my part, but hey, I'm allowed.
But it's also fortunate timing.
Right, exactly. And so it couldn't be any more fortunate. So I think that I've been speaking with a few people, and I think that we can expect a fork of Badger coming along and putting these protocols in there. And I think that it's a fantastic jumping off point. And I would hope that from there that we can get some people to contribute. It's really easy to work with Wallet. And I would hope I had been hoping for a long time that Badger could sort of be the white label for many things. And so hopefully with a fork that has these new protocols in there, we can get some people jumping in and experimenting and doing their own thing, and hopefully some new sustainable business models that don't require that are real businesses, you know what I mean? And don't require charitable donations.
I got you.
So, yeah, that's what I'm working towards. And, you know, I mean, I've said this is a multi-generational project, and it's just like you just take things one step at a time and you give what you can and try to sustain yourself in the meantime. And that's it. You know, I mean, that's what Satoshi did as far as we know. So I think that there's an example there. And I think that with, I love that, that the block, you know, I love that. The statement was, it's from F2 Pool, block 629999.
Mm-hmm.
And the Coinbase, you know, of course, Satoshi's Coinbase was from the Financial Times, January 3rd, or from the Times, January 3rd.
The Times, right. Mm-hmm.
Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks in the Genesis block. And this one they wrote, New York Times, 9th of April, 2020, with $2.3 trillion injection, Fed's plan far exceeds 2008 rescue. And it's like, wow. What a callback at what a time. What a time and what a message. Like, you know, I believe it was Hal Finney. So I would say, like, almost what a spiritual message from the grave. Like, wake up. Wake up.
Yeah. No, that I found that I you know, just being in the business, I have to pay attention to halvings and so on. But I wasn't you know, too into the hype and the hopium, but when I saw that, I was like, "Hey, that's pretty cool, man. That's I really enjoyed it, and it's a nice, especially for newbies if they're jumping in because of the hype and the run up of maybe a week or so ago. Even though they probably got liquidated, I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at the irony of it. But the idea that might provoke discussion, a la 2009 is super, super prescient. Going back for a second, because I don't want to miss it, Badger Wallet also had integrated into it a little calculator, a dividend calculator that took advantage of SLP. And I really thought that didn't get enough press at all, and bearish shares and all that stuff. You reference dividends in your scheme, your swap idea. How crucial will those be? And I'm thinking now here, I guess it could go either way, in the escrow part, but also in the crowdfunding aspects.
I think it's most important in the crowdfunding aspect. And really with the crowdfunding, I think crowdfunding is cool. And I think that it's an interesting way of being able for communities certainly to show their support. And so, you know, like the Flipstarter project, I think is really cool. And they use there's a basically a function within the signing function that's called a SIG hash flag for, mm-hmm. for inputs. And one of them is called anyone can pay. And basically what it enables is it enables me to submit an input and you to submit an input, and we can kind of slam them all together and we can use those to fund a single set of outputs. And so it's like perfect for crowdfunding. It's also used in the postage protocol. It's something that hasn't really been used all that often, but it's been there forever, literally. And so, you know, they're using it in that way. It's also the basic functionality that is used in the swap protocol as well. It's just that the communication is done on chain and the negotiation is done on chain, whereas they do theirs off chain through another protocol and a plugin, which is fine. I mean, you could do it in any way that you want. It's just that if you have a third party, there's always the chance of that censorship. And I think that how that is important in discussing something being disruptive and something following Satoshi's vision and different than Ethereum is what we saw with Ethereum. You know, the killer app was the ICOs. Let's be real.
Right.
Like that was Ethereum's killer app. There is not going to be another killer app that is more of a killer app than ICOs.
No, it's hard to understate what that did and the billions and billions of dollars it generated.
And of course it generated, of course there were scams and there's always going to be.
Yes.
Right. I think that's just a part of everybody sees that there's some money somewhere. And so they go there, but eventually those scams die down. But the problem is you will never see a legit ICO now. You know, the real promise with the ICO, the real promise was that you didn't have to be an accredited investor. You didn't have to go through all of these hoops. You didn't have to have a lot of money. You could do it. It was basically like Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
except the fundamental problem with the way that the ICOs were organized was that it was based upon a model that I think a lot of people still have, unfortunately, including in the BCH community. And that model is, well, I own a bunch of bags, and so I'm going to do a big bag. So anything that makes the value of that bag go up is good, and so I'll invest in things that make the value of the bag go up, which is basically PR. And that's what the ICO model was, that it was like, well, you're going to buy into a token associated with this company, and the company's going to be worth a lot. You don't get any equity or anything, but you get this token that's associated with the company.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's good PR about the company, the value of the token will go up. That was basically the promise.
Yeah.
But that's not fulfilling the promise. The promise is you buy into this and you get equity in the company, and the company earns its revenue in Ethereum, and then it pays you out in Ethereum based upon the percentage of total tokens that you own that are equity tokens. Like, that is groundbreaking. That is absolutely like disruptive, but you will never see that happen now because the regulators have stopped it.
They brought the heat, and this is something that you mentioned it in your Medium article here with regard to Swap, but it really did attract regulators all over the world, but in particular the regulator par excellence in the Securities and Exchange Commission, right? They have more or less put the kibosh on this idea.
But the question is, why were they able to put the kibosh? And it goes back to what the first application of Swap is.
Yep.
Everybody was getting their tokens from exchanges. You were not, there was not, and even, you know, I guess that there were a few what you would call like decentralized exchanges or like software-y type solutions, but even those ended up getting shut down. And it's the reason that you can shut them down if somebody's in control of the smart contract is that you can shut down the smart contract, right? Like, it can be shut down, and most of them have the ability for them to be edited, especially if there's bugs. So they're not like permanent smart contracts. So even if you have a decentralized exchange, is it really decentralized, or is it just happens to be you're in control of the code? I mean, there's a central authority that can shut it down. And so the idea here is, We can't have reasonable regulation if there are no bounds on the scope and power of the regulators themselves. And the only way to put bounds on regulators themselves is for there to be things that regulators just simply do not have the power to enforce, basically. Now, for better or worse, this is the truth. And when you've reached a state, as we have with the SEC, where they don't care, they're an American regulator, U.S. regulator, but they don't care if you are a U.S. citizen or if you've never even stepped foot in the U.S., they'll come and get you and give criminal penalties. And so until we can get to some scenario where this could all be done peer-to-peer, anonymous, from anywhere in the world, untraceable, then we can't have reasonable regulation from the regulators. Like, if there's no opt out, even at sacrifice, then you can't ever expect the state to be reasonable.
I was going to say they're just not incentivized.
No,
to negotiate with you because they have the shutoff valve.
That's it, and so. This is the technical opt-out. With this system, you would be able to, and with SLP, you would be able to, in a actually relatively easy, and all of the pieces are there, you could say, okay, here is a project. We are going to take funding for this project. And relative to the amount of funds that come through the input that you have put in, you will then receive SLP tokens to that address that are, that we are going to mint. And we will earn revenue via via the blockchain with some of the other protocols, which is one of the reasons why I've written the other protocols that I've written, like Simple Ledger Payment Protocol. Mm-hmm. And why I'm such a big fan of BIP70 is because it allows you to pay out to multiple addresses. And it's to say, look, we'll earn the revenue and then we will pay out dividends on that revenue on a pro rata basis to any holder of the token, which gives the token value because then you can trade it openly and you could trade it via the swap protocol, right? So you could actually trade it on chain as well without an exchange. And so it closes the entire economic loop. It closes the loop of being able to capitalize a business, of then being able to receive dividends in exchange for you, well, to receive equity shares, to receive dividends on those shares, and then to be able to freely trade those shares in an uncensorable, trustless, permissionless, global, and anonymous, as much as you want it to be, manner. And so for me, that's like, that's where we get options. That's when the state can start coming around. That's when regulators can start to be reasonable. And it's not a piece of code. It's a protocol. And you can't stop a protocol because anybody could write it in any, just like Bitcoin. You know, you can write a Bitcoin node in any language, and it has been. I mean, BCH has Java, it has C++, it's got Golang. There even used to be a JavaScript, you know? So, yeah, man. I mean, this is, it's the only way that you have, it has to be a protocol. It has to just be an idea. And then it can be implemented in any way, and it's unstoppable.
Yeah, and a quick call back here because I forgot to shout them out. When you mentioned BCHD, and that, of course, is Chris Pacia, Josh Ellithorpe, and you reminded me because you said go, and you're finding that that to be quite advantageous for Cointext, right?
Oh, I mean, their node is just so well thought out. It's what, well, I mean, and it was something that's time had come. They're really filling a need, and again, it's that indexing need. It's all of these new use cases where, you know, ABC is a fantastic node for mining. It really, really is. And which is the reason why the BCH node or whatever they call themselves, why they cloned ABC and why Satoshi's Vision did as well, is because it's a great node. And it's a great node because it's a clone of Core, right? So right. It's like there's a reason, you know, like markets will find the best thing and you just stick with what works. Like there's a reason sure. for all of this, right? But
it serves a different use case as far as you're concerned.
Well, it serves a different use case, period. It was never intended for there to be the requirement for things like explorers. I mean, that's the basic use case for indexing, for having this ordered data so that a human being can explore it. It can explore addresses that are not his own. And that was just not part of the initial vision. Right? The initial vision is that everyone will run their own node. But they're not now. And so then as we had the indexing, then we were able to get into, then that enabled things like SLP. And so now when we have really robust indexing, we're able to do things like swap. And swap uses, I mean, if you look at the swap code, it leverages BCHD nodes and it leverages BitDB nodes as well.
The Medium article that Venice put up on Signal Watch and Pay protocol swap ends with the following line. The swap protocol is just the next step in the evolution toward the voluntary, permissionless, uncensorable economy that is the promise of Bitcoin. I can't think of a better way to end our conversation. Always a workout, man. I could literally talk to you for 4 more hours. And selfishly, I want to, but I know I've got to let you go and get on and be productive. And, you know, in between creating whole entire new ecosystems, you take a break here to throw us a bone and help us better understand your work. So I really appreciate it, but I do want you to get back to it. where can people follow you going forward? All things Vin Armani, and keep tabs of me.
At Vin Armani on Twitter that's where I'm share just about everything that I do. And then I have a monthly newsletter called Counter Markets, where we discuss, it's basically an agorist newsletter. So it's a lot about counter economics. And it's actually become incredibly popular, as you could probably imagine, during this particular time, because we talk a lot about kind of black and gray markets and informal economies. And it seems like that's something that people are really in need of right now. So if these sorts of ideas interest people from an ideological standpoint, countermarkets.com, they can check it out. They can get their first issue for free. And it's a labor of love, but at the same time, we've got a great community of people who have come along, and every subscriber gets to be part of our private mastermind group on Telegram, which is now pretty large, and some very amazing people who are doing some of the coolest things I've ever seen. Some real makers and builders, and really intelligent and thoughtful people, and just fun in general. So countermarkets.com, if people want to go and check that out. It is a big focus of my life right now as well.
It's mandatory reading. Keep up with Vin, follow him. He's one to watch, and not sleep on. Vin, best of luck with you and the family, the new move. Thanks for all that you do. The sobriety, the thoughtfulness, and we are rooting for you, man.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much.